Hello and welcome to Media Mavens. This is episode 60. I'm Pam, and with me as always is Riley.
Hello.
Hey Riley, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I've been cleaning out my recyclables room of cardboard that I have just been hoarding for the last month. So it took like an hour and a half this morning. And
Jesus.
Yeah. It was a lot of cardboard. I'm not exaggerating.
I feel like my house is always full of cardboard too, because Will's always ordering things from Amazon. So we just have cardboard all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a good amount of Amazon boxes, yeah.
So with us today, we have a returning guest. It's Yusuf Cole. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
No problem. Thank you so much for coming on. Yusuf, you wrote a great review of the game Detroit Become Human for Waypoint a little while ago, so that is what we will be talking about in the second half of the show. Do you want to just tell people a little about yourself if they're not familiar with your work?
Sure. I am a game critic, and reviews actually are like probably the least amount of things I write. I mostly do like kind of critical essays that go into this or that like specific idea or theme that a game is exploring and then try and like break that down. So that's kind of my like my area of interest. But I also like the Detroit review was fun because it allowed me to use some of those muscles in the same way that I would have done if it had been like not a review. So yeah, I write about games in a usually pretty like open-ended and like thoughtful and critical way. And I do that online on a couple websites, including Waypoint, as you mentioned, and Unwinnable. I have a column at Unwinnable, and I also write for Zam occasionally.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely felt like your review, actually a lot of the Waypoint reviews are more on the critical essay spectrum than the it's nice. All right, so we'll just start out before we get to our main topic with what we've been up to lately. So Yusuf, what have you been playing or watching or reading?
A couple items on my list are like old things, because I've been reticent to like explore new games. I've just been kind of lazy about it and new things. So I've just been like kind of going back to the familiar areas of my life. So I've been playing a lot of Destiny 2. That's been like my obsession this summer. Ever since they came out with their second expansion, which was called, I think, Rasputin. It's actually like small as far as Destiny expansions go. Like, they're releasing a much bigger one in September. But it was still like, there's something about it, like they just like tweaked enough variables that the game, which had previously to me felt very stale and repetitive, like just kind of opened up a lot. And it's just been really fun to play, because like I'm at the right level, my character's at a good level where everything is like difficult but not like overly difficult and not too easy. So it's like the challenge is fun, and making cool decisions with like what kind of powers I'm using. And yeah, like I've just been really enjoying like digging into that. And it has that MMO loop where you're basically, you know, you have a bunch of things you could do in 1 week, and then like they reset every week. So like the next week comes and you're like, oh, I can do this activity again. Even though it's the same activity, it just feels more special because like you couldn't like get the great item out of it that you could have the previous week.
Yeah, okay.
That's interesting. I've been away from Destiny 2 for a while because I was kind of bored. But if the changes are actually like making it a little more interesting to play, then maybe I'll jump back in.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it's not something I would aggressively argue to anyone. They know how Destiny is like.
Yeah.
But I don't know, just like it's working for me right now. So I'm like, all right, I'll keep playing until I get bored. And that hasn't happened yet. So, yeah. Also, they're going to do much more of it in September, but they've like started rolling out ways that weapons are like more fleshed out and interesting, or like they kind of give you more ways to put time and energy into like making a weapon better. So you can kind of like if you there's a gun that you shoot a bunch of people with it in a certain way, and then it'll get make the gun itself like do different things eventually. So there's kind of like that loop where it's like it's just kind of a standard grind. But it's also like I mean it's always has been a game that has been very like very satisfying as like a first person shooter. Like it just like is super well tuned, especially for playing on the console. It's just I was like the way like you can move around and like the nature of like headshots kind of being very mm-hmm. satisfying, and like the sound effects and the visual mm-hmm. of the game has like always been cool. It's just like there's usually not much of a reason to like keep doing it because you're just doing the same content over and over again.
Yeah.
But I think it's like there's right now there's just enough variety in what I'm doing in it that like I don't feel like I'm just like grinding. I feel more like I'm just kind of returning to a place that is very comforting. It's kind of like comfort food, especially when like everything's so shitty in the world. So like it's like a really good like escape where you can like know what you have to do and all that. So I mean, it's definitely not like intellectually rigorous, but it's like it's just like a really like comforting experience. So I have been like little by little like using it like as fodder for essays. Like I wrote a column for Unwinnable last month about like how it's a really good game for like environmental storytelling because it's partially because it's so repetitive. Like you're always going like because the loop of the game is like you go out to the world and you like do a couple of missions and you get like enough loot and such to like we'll go back to the tower because you have to go back to the tower to like to break it down or to like sell it or to unlock engrams that are previously like this, the only place you can like open them up is at the tower. So you're going back there, and then the tower has a lot of like human NPCs who are talking and conversing like about usually non like just like totally random things, like when they're going to get the next shipment of food, or like talking about player as if they were like a third person. So you kind of get like extra story bits there that only happen because you're because you can hear things when you're in your menus. So I'll just be in my menu, like just like deconstructing items, and then some human behind me is like gossiping. So it's kind of like an interesting way to like deliver a story, or at least to do environmental storytelling, where it's like super passive, but it's also like really makes the world feel more real and more lived in than you would think for a game like Destiny, which is so artificial in other ways.
Yeah,
that will hopefully be like reposted sometime in the next few weeks.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a cool way to sort of give stories. It's a little more interesting than like, you know, magazines lying around or things like Detroit has. But and it's nice. I've always been a fan of sort of the audio log. I know some people aren't a fan of that for storytelling, but especially if it's something that you can listen to it while you're doing extra things, and it's not just like you have to stop and listen to the story, like it's sort of in passing. It's a really sort of vibrant way of doing it, I find.
Yeah, it's just like it's like a textural storytelling where it's just like you're not really like be directly like engaging with it. It's how you like know how a city is like just from walking around the streets. Like you hear certain kinds of conversations in San Francisco or certain conversations in Toronto or in New York, you know, like people like are different in different cities, and you get that not through talking directly to them, just from overhearing them basically.
All right. Riley, how about you?
I guess speaking of going back to games that we've already played, and I've been playing a lot of Pokemon Go lately, like an absurd amount. They added like a ton of new stuff since the last time that I played. It's been like at least a year and a half since I played at all. So they've added like research tasks, so you can have like kind of quests to do every day, and those can vary from like evolving a Pokemon or catching a certain amount of Pokemon, like spinning a certain amount of Pokestops or gyms, and you get rewards from doing that, and then if you do them enough in a row, you get like a special reward at the end of like extra items. And then they have an ongoing I guess, research quest where the end stage of it, you get to capture Mew, which is kind of cool because I like that Pokemon a lot.
Oh.
They've added raids, like gym raids. So you can, at like established gyms, there will be like an alert that pops up that there's a raid starting soon. And so it's a more powerful Pokemon that's there usually. And it varies from like easier to way more difficult. So the at the very end of the difficulty spectrum is like a legendary Pokemon. And then at the other side, it can be something as stupid as like a Magikarp, which has been a disappointment for me because some of the gyms near my house are like really close. So I could just like walk down in like 5 minutes. And by the time I get there, the raid will pop and it's like a Magikarp. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. I went outside and it's really hot and it's just a Magikarp. But when you do gym raids, you also get the chance to catch the Pokemon. So the more difficult the battle is, like the more, I guess, rare and like beefy the Pokemon will be. So you have a chance to catch them after. And they've also added like a friends list so you can give gifts to people, which has been really fun. And you can kind of see, I mean, if you're concerned about like people seeing your location, this might be a problem, but you can send people gifts from Pokestops, and the Pokestops are obviously the ones that you have been to. So a couple are near my house, so I only send them to people that I know really well. All the other ones go out to like anybody that's added me on Twitter. So I know these names, so the further away names are getting, the further away Pokestops from my house.
Huh. Are the gifts just like from your phone camera?
They're like, so each Pokestop has like a picture of where it is, and it'll tell you like, the one in the middle of Brampton is like Celebration Square. So if you live in Brampton, you know where that is, and it shows you like a little picture of where the gift came from, and it like also says exactly where it is. So the Pokestops that are close to my house, I don't send them to anybody except for like my boyfriend and Sarah. Who I know really well. Yeah. And then they've added like a whole bunch of new ways to like hatch eggs. So you hatch eggs by walking, and the further you walk, the more eggs you can hatch, like depending on the distance that the eggs have on them. So I've hatched like a ton of Pokemon eggs, and I've got like so many new Pokemon. And right now is the 2-year anniversary of the game. So this weekend has like a huge, there's like a summer event happening right now where you can catch Pikachus that have little hats and sunglasses. And they're the cutest thing ever. And then tomorrow there's an event where you can catch Squirtles with sunglasses, like the Squirtle Squad Squirtles. Oh my god, I'm so excited. And then they have like special raid events that are happening. So like the legendary bird Pokemon Articuno is going to be in all of the gyms, and there's like different variants of Pokemon that you can catch, and it's just, there's so much going on right now, and it's so good, and it's been really good to actually like get me outside, even though it's been super warm, because it like really encourages you to like get out and walk and like catch Pokemon and spin Pokestops for experience. So I'll go out at like 7:30, 8 o'clock when it's not super hot, and then I'll walk for like maybe an hour and a half, like just around town, and then come back. And it's been really good for my sleep schedule. Oh. Because as soon as I get home, I'm like, all right, I'm sleepy now, and I won't stay up until like midnight anymore, which is good.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's been really fun.
Awesome. Did the announcement of Pokemon Let's Go have anything to do with picking the game up again?
Yeah. I think they announced that, and I was like, it's time to play Pokemon again. Because we have a Switch at home, so I was like, yeah.
Awesome. So I have mostly been playing new things. I've tried out the Awesome Adventures of Captain Spirit, which was the free title from Don't Nod. It's meant to be a sort of, like, it's in some way related to what's called Life is Strange. So you play as a young boy who thinks he's a superhero, and he has to go through his house finding like a cape and a costume for him to be a superhero. And at the very beginning of the game, basically, you see that he's living with just his dad, and his dad is an alcoholic. So it's mostly just about being this boy who's basically playing pretend, or at least that's what you think he's doing. And it was kind of cute. Like, it's very, very similar to Life is Strange. There's no time-based component like there was in that, but it's, you know, pretty chill. One of the things I really liked in Life is Strange was the parts where you could just like sit down and like listen to music. Like, you would just lay on your bed or like sit on a bench and music would happen and the camera would go sort of all around the area getting different looks at things. And it does that in this game too, which I thought was pretty cool. Although I did find it a little bit on the dull side compared to Life is Strange. I think it just, the story was very short. And, you know, it was mostly just taking place around this one boy's house. Though I did find that they did a really good job of, like, putting my dad in a video game, which was weird. So it was all right. You kind of find out how it ties into Life is Strange. So I'm sort of excited about the sequel to that. Yeah, it was pretty good.
That's free, right? That one?
Yeah, it's free.
Yeah.
Cool, I didn't realize it was free.
Yep.
Maybe I'll check it out then.
Yeah, it's only maybe 2 hours long, so.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Short and free, my favorite.
Yeah, exactly. Other than that, I've been playing some just sort of like sim type games. I picked up Scream Ride, which has a couple different modes. There's one where you're basically like on a roller coaster and you have to like speed around and bank around curves and get like turbo boosts and things. You can send the cart sort of flying off the track if you want to. There's little challenges to do. There's also a mode where you can build your own roller coasters, which I didn't play much of. I'm much more into destruction than creation in these kinds of games. And the third one, which I really liked, was called Demolition Expert. And so you have this big launcher that launches these cages of people into buildings. So it's just basically like a physics playground where you launch something and try to take out the building supports, and then you get to watch the buildings fall down, which is awesome. Yeah. And then just yesterday, maybe the day before yesterday, I picked up the new Jurassic Park. I always want to call it Operation Genesis because that was the original Jurassic Park builder, but it's called Jurassic World Evolution. So it's basically, you know, a theme park builder, but you also get to like mess around with the dino genetics and things. So I haven't gotten too far into it, but so far it's pretty cool. And it looks really nice. The dinosaurs look awesome.
That's interesting. I wonder if it's like Sim Life. You ever play Sim Life? It's not a very good sim game. But it was like, I didn't have many growing up. So like this one, the one I played the most for some reason. And you could like genetically engineer weird animals.
Cool.
That's cool. I wonder how weird you can make your dinosaurs.
Yeah, I haven't really started. Like, I'm just basically there's 5 islands that you get access to, and I'm still on the first one. So I am able to do like a little bit of manipulation, like of their like color or their defensive abilities, things like that. But I haven't seen like the full extent of what you're able to do there. What else have you been up to, Yusuf?
I watched it last night because it's on HBO now. It's on HBO. It's a hard movie to talk about because yeah. Nothing but pronouns. It's very mediocre. I didn't watch the first one, but I didn't really like this one that much because, I don't know, I feel like it didn't know what it wanted to be. Like, it was like halfway like a Steven Spielberg kids movie. Like, it felt very Stranger Things-y. Mm-hmm. But then, like, it was also super grotesque in parts. like where it felt like they just wanted to be to like remind us that it was a horror movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was like also very long. It was like over 2 hours long, which seems incredibly unnecessary.
Yeah, yes.
Like the point is like made so quickly. Like we understand it's just a clown monster eats kids. So why do we need 2 hours of that? So that was kind of a bummer because yeah, I was like hoping because it actually is like the visual like the design is cool of the clown and like the person who plays him and like some of the ways it's set up like it's a cool looking movie. It's just like not doesn't work as a horror movie, especially as because I saw Hereditary a few weeks ago and that was really good.
I've heard a lot about Hereditary. I haven't seen it yet.
I recommend it. It's very scary though.
Is it?
At least the end. The end is, I mean, like, it's basically, like, a very slow build kind of style of movie. Mm. Like, it doesn't, like, doesn't go too far. And then, like, the end is just, like, a nonstop, just, like, a roller coaster descent into hell.
Oh, wow.
To speak like a film reviewer. But, like, it's just, like, very, like, it just, like, crescendos and never stops crescendoing until, like, it's over. Mm-hmm. So that's really, it was really fun to watch in the movie theater because it was like, I don't know, like something special about movie theaters and horror movies and the audience interaction with the screen. Like, I feel like it would have been more fun watching it that way.
That's where I saw that movie was in the theaters. And it was, my experience was like in the theater, it was like super scary. And like at the same time, like really funny. So like just because of the interactions between the kids. So I can see where watching it, if I were to watch it again, where the disconnect might be between like what kind of movie it wants to be. Cause it was at times like kind of like a buddy kid movie.
Yeah. It was worthwhile to try and tread that line. And I could sort of see, yeah. I could also see it working better in theaters too. Like, cause there are parts where it is just like just a comedy, like where like they're trying to escape the house. It was like, not so scary door, a scary door.
Yeah, yeah.
Scarier door. It's like, it's just a pick which door to go out of. It's like, why is this happening right now? Like, they're in a haunted house and it's like, it becomes like just a slapstick comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll just like talk about Ancillary. Have either of you read Ancillary Justice?
Yes, tell me if you liked it.
Oh, I love it.
Yay!
Some of my favorite books of all time.
Oh, wow.
It's yeah, so good. It's been building up that way in terms of reputation for me. Just like, because I read it a few years ago, so, and I kind of read it every year now. Like, I just like, it's definitely one of, like, it's like Destiny was like this comfort book. Mm. Or comfort, like, I wasn't going to it because I'm like, I've been like a little stressed, and I'm just like, and I also like, got myself into this like hole where I just have to read a lot of books, especially for like writing stuff. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to read this serious book. So I'm like turtling into this comforting science fiction world of Ancillary Justice where like the characters are so great and it's such a cool universe. Like in the way like everything is described is so interesting. Like, because I mean, to summarize, it's just like, it's about like an AI who once was like a ship that controlled thousands of bodies that were like organic, and it's something happened to make it become just one body, and so that's the person you're following throughout the three books. It actually is like interesting reading it like before and after playing Detroit and like thinking about like this approach to AI that does feel very novel and refreshing, where it's so much about like not only like about what does it mean to be human, but also like what does it mean to be part of like a, you know, an empire and part of like a kind of stronger, more powerful and often more immoral class of people, and like trying to be a good ally at the same time, and also having your own internal like conflicts or your own internal like anxiety and pain because you've like experienced like the negative side of being part of this empire, but you're also like at the same time like benefiting from it. By being, because like basically Breck is like a military officer and kind of maintains that privilege throughout all the books, but is also trying to undermine the empire that she's a part of. So like, it's, I don't know, it's just like really definitely the kind of book series that like benefits from rereading because there are a lot of complicated things that happen in it.
Yes.
That are just like, even like, yeah, I'm just like always like, I'm always getting new perspectives on it. Like, because, like, the author, Anne Leckie, she's just, like, she's, like, exploring a lot of, like, dramatic ideas that are just so hard to like wrap your mind around, which are basically like a lot of it's like about almost like multiple personalities, like how you can have multiple personalities at the same time as having like one personality, mm-hmm. and what it means for like somebody that doesn't like, or for a mind that doesn't really think in terms of like having its own body, like how can it like then go on to like behave like a human, and how like what does it mean when it's like limited to one body, and like how can AI love each other, and go, like just gets like into like incredibly like far-reaching concepts that are just like, I never feel like I'm like reading something that I'm just like bored by, where I'm just like, oh, I know like what this is about. I always like get some new perspective on it, which is like pretty awesome for a book that is not really like, I don't know if it's like, you know, it's like, it's not a heavy read. It's like a very entertaining read.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like I need to reread it. I read it a couple years ago, and then Riley's been talking about it recently. And when I read it the first time, it was a while before I sort of could grasp what exactly was going on. So I feel like going back and reading it with that knowledge already there, I will definitely be able to take a lot more from, especially the sort of like first half of the book.
Yeah. Totally. I definitely spent the first half of the book going, wait, what? Like a lot. So I had to like go back and reread and be like, okay, that sentence is there. And then just kind of keep going.
Yeah, like kind of going back and like, you're like, oh, okay. Because there's a lot of things happen like that didn't seem significant, then they seem more significant. Like going back. Because like, you just don't know what. It just helps to like know what is important when you're reading a story, and then like to know what's not as important.
Yeah.
And this is definitely a story where like, or a series where there's like a lot of things happening, and like if you can't, you just can't like attach the same level of attention to each thing that's happening. So you have to like prioritize. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and so going back and like knowing what is going to happen later on like helps you to do that.
Yeah.
All right. Do you want to just do your last one too?
Sure. Yeah, I've been listening to the Make It Sound Fiction podcast.
Yay.
Some friends of the cast and are of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Of my Twitter experience. Yeah, so that is by Nico and Tyler. And it's a podcast that so far is just really interesting. I mean, it's only a few episodes in, and like it's kind of talking about games from like their unique perspective, which is like kind of at least for Nico's part, it's like feeling kind of like an outsider perspective,
mm-hmm.
where it's like she's not playing like a ton of games, but she's also like seeing it from like a media perspective, a media studies perspective. So like the first episode is really interesting because it was just talking about E3 and like somebody who's like probably not going to play most of those games. Like, what is their outlook? Like, what is like, how are they going to like bounce off of those presentations that where they like, which assume that you're like a certain person is watching them.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean like I didn't even play Overwatch anymore, and it's still like interesting to hear them talk about Overwatch because it's like, yeah, their perspective is feels like pretty unique in that respect.
Yeah, I was super happy to hear that I would have Nico back in my ears on a regular basis. I think she's been on the podcast like four or five times. So, yeah, it's been really good. I always like their Overwatch discussion. I know they do sometimes sort of collaborate on some videos too on Tyler's YouTube channel, and those are always really good as well.
Tyler's YouTube channel is like has a ton of really good like tips, mm-hmm. and like things that you might not think about. Like he talked about like a bunch of different training modes and stuff, which I think I'm not playing Overwatch as much anymore, but at the time I was using those training modes and I felt like I was getting a lot better.
All right. Riley, what else have you been doing?
Honestly, not a lot. I mean, this is kind of like the time of year where I don't want to do anything because it's so hot. So I just end up like becoming this lazy meat sack and just watching like old stuff. So I've been watching like Supernatural, and I'm like on season 7 now. So I'm like motoring through them. And then Like a month ago, I bought tickets to, well, not tickets. I bought ticket one to a K-pop concert that came here in Toronto. And they came on July 2nd. And I totally forgot that I bought the ticket.
Oh, really?
until like 3 days before. Oops. And I was like, oh, fuck. Because I have a really bad memory. So on Tuesday of this week, although it'll be next week by the time this episode comes out, I went to a concert at the Scotiabank Center, which previously is the Air Canada Center. They renamed it, like, just.
I feel like I'm never going to get that. I still call it the Rogers Center, the Sky Dome, so.
Yeah. I mean, they, like, calling it the ACC is just, like, so, it's, like, such a Toronto thing. So having it be, like, the Scotiabank Arena is kind of dumb, but whatever. So, yeah, I went to, like, a big K-pop concert, and it was awesome.
Who was the concert?
The group called GOT7. And they were here, I think, 2 years ago, for like a fan meeting. So they haven't done like an actual, like, full concert. Fan meetings are just, like a couple songs from usually their newest album. And then, they play like games and stuff with the audience. And then you can have a chance to meet them like at the end. Whereas a concert is like, it was like a full 3 hour concert. It was long. And I got there and I sat beside another girl who was also there by herself. So we were like, you know, introduced ourselves, and we were kind of emotional support for each other because we didn't have anybody else to like scream with. So that was really good. And I bought a very expensive drink. It was like $18.
Oh no. I hope it was good.
It was really good. It was like some red sangria drink. It was good. And I brought earplugs for the first time in my concert going life. And I don't know why I didn't do that sooner. Because my ears felt really good after. And I walked around and I played Pokemon before I went in there. Which was fun. But yeah, it was good. And then I got home at, like, I don't know, 1 o'clock. And I think I'm too old for concerts because I slept, like, as soon as I got back from work that day, I slept from, like, 6 o'clock until the next morning. Till 6 o'clock. Oh, wow. Yeah, I was exhausted. I was like, I'm old.
That's good that it was fun, though. Are there any more concerts coming up?
Yeah, BTS is actually supposed to be here in September.
Oh.
And I might not be here in September, but I tried to get tickets anyway, and I didn't, so.
Ah, that's too bad.
I was like, I hope I'm not here, because I'll be very upset.
Yes.
I don't know. I think there's another group called Day 6 that is also coming, and they play all of their own instruments, so they're like a band group. Nice. They're coming in November, I believe. And then I don't think I know of any others. At least none that are on my radar, but I'm sure that there will be some, especially next year. Seems like they're getting more well-known groups lately, so.
Cool. So last couple things for me. I've been reading Masters of Doom, which is the story of John Romero and John Carmack, who made id Software, and just sort of the story of how their games like Wolfenstein 3D and Doom impacted the gaming industry and then pop culture kind of as a whole. So it's been really interesting to read through it. Definitely brought back some memories of getting games on old shareware discs. I used to play a lot of my PC games like that, and I didn't realize that it was id Software who sort of made shareware like a really huge thing in PC gaming. And I also didn't really realize that at one point people were like, you can't make games on PC. Like, it was considered this really cool thing when one of them sort of recreated Super Mario Brothers 3 on a PC. And now, like, even though console gaming might be more popular, you know, PC is like the real sort of powerhouse system for games. So it's been really interesting. It's a little like maddening, like the description of the sort of office environment, because they were both two just like young, like early 20s when they started their company and started making these games. And the office environment just sounds like madness, like just people doing death matches and screaming at each other and like punching holes in the walls. And it's like, I knew that trouble was coming when they talked about they had there's like five or six of them, and they would all play a Dungeons and Dragons campaign, and it talked about how five of them were fighters and one of them was like a thief acrobat. And I was like, uh-oh, that's trouble. You need some balance in your personalities here. Like, oh my God. Yeah, so I'm not quite finished the book, but I've just gotten to the point where Carmack and Romero have sort of split up to do their separate things, because Carmack was like all about building new engines and things, whereas Romero was all about game design, and they sort of butt heads to the point where they couldn't really work with each other anymore. But yeah, it's really interesting. I've been reading a lot more books about gaming history lately. So yeah. And then the last thing is I've been listening to Citations Needed podcast. Podcast. Yeah, it's really good. I heard it mentioned on Waypoint, I think. And so I have gone back basically, and I started listening from the beginning of the show. So I'm not caught up on it. I think I've listened to about 20 or something episodes. So the one that I was listening to last was about the media's addiction to perseverance porn. And I guess I should probably say what Citations Needed is. It's like a media criticism podcast, and it criticizes how the media presents things, sort of the so-called left-wing media in particular, and how it's, you know, not all that left-leaning. So the episode I was listening to last, it's about how the media loves to tell these stories about sort of people pulling themselves up by their bootstraps, things like, you know, people raising money for a family member's life-saving surgery or something like that, without really any commentary that you shouldn't have to do this. Like, healthcare should be a thing that everyone gets. You shouldn't have to, like, sell all your belongings or fundraise in order to get the healthcare you need. Things like workers who like walk 20 miles to and from work every day to get to their like shitty minimum wage jobs, and how there's like, oh, look how these people persevere. There's no excuses for, you know, not being able to do your work and stuff like that. So it's been really interesting. Like, the topics range from a lot of things. Like, there's been sort of the history of the U.S. and North Korea. That was a really interesting episode. The one before the one I was listening to now was about Trump washing and how the media is like, oh, well, before Donald Trump, America was, you know, great. It was like free and about liberty and equality for everyone.
Yeah. It's a good podcast. It's also like, it's kind of funny. Like, I use it a lot for research when I'm writing about stuff. Like, it was really helpful when I was writing about Mafia 3 and the Black Panthers. When Waypoint did like a week about guns and games. I went back and they have an episode about, the episode is more about like how the Black Panthers and how like there's like socialism is something that kind of, I guess, Black liberation groups and like other like groups that were focused on like Black human rights were still like actually very pro-socialist, when like today, like a lot of the Democratic Party in America is like socialism is only for like white people, and there's no connection between that and racial organizing and like political struggle. They were kind of like talking about how that is kind of a falsehood that is very like ahistorical. But then they also, like, in every one of their episodes, they have a ton of source material, or at least a little bit of it. And whenever they bring a guest, those guests are usually people who write books. So like I just like bought the books of the people who were on that episode and just read them. So they're super good for just like educating yourself like extremely thoroughly about an issue, like if you have the energy and time. Mm-hmm. But it's like so useful as a resource in terms of thinking about politics.
Yeah, I've been learning a lot from it. Like there's some, I mean, it's obviously very sort of U.S. focused. So there's some.
There's a Canada episode though.
Is there? I don't
know. Yeah. It's like, it's basically about how like Canada pretends it's better than the U.S.
But it's not.
But it's like they interview some Canadian political journalists.
If you want, like, I know Pam, you listen to it, but like for our listeners who maybe don't know, is The Secret Life of Canada is a very good podcast about like Canada's shady past and things that we don't talk about. Mm-hmm. So that's a really good one if you want to get a little more educated on Canadian history and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's useful. So I'll check it out.
All right, so that brings us to our main topic, which is Detroit Become Human, which is a sort of choice-based adventure game made by Quantic Dream and just released fairly recently. I think it came out in May. It is about androids. According to creator David Cage, it's just about androids who want to be free and nothing else. But you sort of play as three different characters throughout the game. There is Kara, who is a sort of home care, child care android who travels with a little girl. There is Marcus, who ends up leading the android revolution. And there is Connor, who is an android who is chasing down deviant androids, since the androids seem to be developing self-awareness and emotions. We can start, I guess, with your review, Yusuf. Was there anything that made you sort of want to review this game in particular? Or
yeah, for one, it's definitely a game I was planning on playing because in this house, we play David Cage games. Even though they're terrible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like we played like, oh, I didn't play like before Heavy Rain, but we started playing Heavy Rain and like me and my wife. And we played Beyond Two Souls, and yeah, like as terrible as they, as poorly written as they are, like it's just something really fun about those games for like playing in a group because they're choice based. You can argue with each other over what choice to make. You can like chastise each other for making the wrong choice, and like it's very entertaining. Like versus like any other game where like somebody's watching the other person play, and it's extremely boring. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I knew I was gonna play it, and then I obviously read a lot about, like, yeah, the kind of really questionable politics of it from the get-go, you know, where, like, they just immediately, like, just stepped in it repeatedly in terms of, like, using race as this, like, really awkward symbol, like, or, symbolism or, like structure to get to make the oppression of the androids make sense. I was like, yeah, that's fucked up, probably. And yeah, I want to write about it. So I was, like, doing a bunch of research about it, and I was, like, just trying to read more about androids. Like, I was, like, reading a bunch of Asimov, because, like, he released a bunch of, like, short story compilations about robots, which are pretty interesting. Because he's, like, he's also, like, kind of apolitical about it, but, like, his stories still, like, raise interesting questions. Like, it's kind of interesting, like, because there's basically, like, a school of thought that when, like, the word robot came from, like, a play that was, like, about robots taking over. So, like, it was, like, from the get-go, kind of, like, this negative thing. And he kind of wanted, he turned it into, like, something that could be neutral or positive. And it's kind of, like, responsible for, like, the way we see robots now. But it's also, like, yeah, he was kind of, like, he was rejecting the idea that it was, like, a de facto case where robots were a reflection of humanity's hubris or, like, this like, kind of this Frankenstein's monster that we created. So like it was fun reading his stuff and just like trying to like, I also read a pretty cool book called Autonomous. I forget the author's name, but it's like a novel that's like extremely allegorical and like it's science fiction. It's kind of set in the future where like robots are essentially slaves, like they're considered indentured, but they're also like human slaves. And so, like, it's kind of this case where, like, it balances, like, those two ideas where it's, like, robot slavery and human slavery. Like, why are they, like, or, like, how they are different from each other and, like, how they play into each other as ideas. Yeah, so that was, like, a pretty interesting jumping off point. And I wanted to talk about that. And then I basically, it kind of just got roped into, like, writing a review. Because, like, Waypoint wasn't sure if they wanted to do a review. And then they kind of, like, ended up. I already wanted to write something generally about it, so like Austin was just like, "Here, you can write the review." So I was like, "Okay, I'll try and make it like not just like talking about the mechanics and the the basics of it that we all kind of know how it's going to be like." Like, it's just like kind of follows the same. I mean, it's a more refined version of the same of the exact same formula that they've followed since their earliest games. I think it's playing with ideas that are potentially very interesting, and like I could. My goal was to explore in how it fails to like execute on those ideas. I could then talk about why the ideas are cool or why they're useful, even though I was sure that the game was not going to be able to like live up to them.
Yeah, I really liked especially the very beginning of your review and talking about sort of the history of Detroit, particularly from a labor standpoint, and how the game sort of like hints at it at the beginning, but then it just completely drops it for the more like revolution storyline. But the beginning of the game does have people angry because androids are being used for labor, and so people are losing their jobs because androids are taking them over, which is like a thing that happens. I mean, not androids, but you know, automation, I guess, takes over and people no longer have their jobs. So you see it at the very beginning when Marcus sort of gets assaulted because people hate androids because of labor reasons. Of course, there's the thing of not getting mad at the right people, which I find it strange that no one ever really gets mad at CyberLife for the whole game. That I saw, like CyberLife is never considered the bad guy, even though depending on how your story goes, they can quite clearly be the bad guy, like not just in a they're the reason for all this unemployment, but like the they have nefarious
goals.
Yeah.
And they're so detached from the rest of the story, like they're literally like miles outside of the city. So it's like this you only see them in that one section, which is interesting. Like they could have made a point about how that like it is like a detached corporation that's like kind of playing people off of their like basest fears, like which is something that does happen, but like it doesn't really touch that. It just basically like kind of sidelines it, and like it's just like not the story, you know. The story is literally just at like androids getting free. That's like 90% of the story, when there could have been so much more about like, yeah, like what it means for, yeah, for the labor aspect. Like I just don't think they had like the interest or the capability to like do that subject justice.
Yeah, that's true. But they didn't really have the capability to do the subjects they did tackle justice either. As I sort of quoted from David Cage at the beginning, he told Kotaku, "The story I'm telling is really about androids. They're discovering emotions and wanting to be free. If people want to see parallels with this or that, that's fine. But my story is about androids who want to be free." So this is something that a lot of developers have been saying recently. I think just a couple weeks ago about the new Division game, when the publishers were saying like, oh no, there's no political message about this story that takes place in the nation's capital and you know has freedom fighters running around, like it's not political at all. Why do you think they keep saying this? Like, why do you think people sort of don't want to admit to anything outside of like this very small scope of what they're doing?
Well, I mean, essentially, they can get away with it, like, so far, yeah. I mean, like, there's no benefit for them. Like, the question is, like, why are they making the game so political and then don't want to talk about it? Like, because, yeah. Like, they could have made Division in some like non-realistic city, but especially with something like Division, like it, which is based like based on like Tom Clancy, who's like inherently like a, it's like a political subject matter because his stuff is all like basically Fox News propaganda, like about like what would happen if like Russia takes over, like this or that. Yeah, you're kind of like you're. They want to benefit off of like the trappings of a political game without like making a statement this like one way or another, and thereby like alienating a group of their players. So they're like politics, interesting, but they're like, we're not going to say anything more than that. Like, just like the world is messed up.
That's you can, it.
You can like take your stand on why it's messed up, right? Like, but you're not, we're not going to tell you why we think, what we think is going on. And that allows you to like come at it with a, with whatever like perspective you want, which to them is great because they're like, oh, cool. You're like making your choices, player agency. But at the same time, it's like, well, that's also awful because like some of the ways that people are like, are reacting to this stuff are negative ideologies. Like, and it will feed back into that. Like, if you're not, if you, you yourself don't make like a concrete statement, like people can like, you know, especially in the Division, like you're killing looters, so people could probably come at it and think that looters are bad, whereas like, you know, the reality is they're just like, being a looter is very much dependent on like what your skin color is, as we saw in like New Orleans, where it's like newspapers were like reporting white families getting food as like, we're just, they're, like they're just feeding themselves, and like whenever it was a black family, they were like described as rioters and looters and getting shot at. So like these are like things that they that, like they're not going to touch, but they will like borrow the language and the aesthetics because it's like it makes the game seem more less like just like a fantasy or kind of a detached experience, and like feeds off of like the real drama of the world without having to like make a stand. And that's definitely going on with Detroit, where it's like there's just so little, so few original ideas happening in it. Cage is just like looking at like civil rights history and saying like, that's, people thought that was pretty important. Like, I'll graft that onto my game, and now my game is important. Like, he, of course he like, he's like recognizing the politics, but like he knows that he doesn't have to like come out and say it, because like, you know, like that's the way the PR system works, is like he'll still be able to like get away with making his like statements in a vacuum and then like not really being challenged on it. So
he takes so many things about race and sort of puts them onto this story of androids. One point I was when you're trying to transform the square after you release a bunch of androids, and you have a choice between like just wrecking the square, which is what Adam did in his playthrough, or you can be like the peaceful protester and you just like tag things with slogans, and one of the slogans was "We have a dream," and I was just like, I'm actually kind of sad that Adam didn't see that in his playthrough. So like there's that. At the end of the game, you're literally doing a hands up, don't shoot. There's also concentration camps at the very end. So it's just, I don't know. It's this weird thing where the hatred of androids is like the new racism. The game doesn't really address, like, if is racism still a thing in the world? Or is just like now everyone just hates androids? Like, is, are they pulling a Handmaid's Tale here where they're like, oh, no, race isn't a thing. It's just women that have it bad now. Race is no longer relevant, because I'm trying to figure it out, because they're trying to tell the story one way, but at the same time, like, there's little things in the game, like the Luther android model is, he says, I'm designed to do heavy labor, and he is a large black man with a vaguely African accent. So like, it seems like racism is still a thing, but it's like never really addressed.
No, not at all. I mean, like, and it's, his introduction is so offensive because, like, he comes onto the room and everyone's like, it's like, he's not doing anything. He's just walking toward you. It's like, why is Kara racist?
Yeah,
she's an android. Like,
that into her?
Why aren't they scared of the man who looks just like the man who was just beating them in the last scene?
I actually thought that it was the same person until I looked a little closer.
There, like, I saw at least four characters who I thought were the same person. I was like, is the dad an android? Because I swear they use that model for multiple characters in the game.
And oh yeah, and on the racism tip, like, well, they have like that character toward the end. I forget her name, but she's kind of like helping them on the Underground Railroad.
Oh yeah,
which is called the Underground Railroad.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it's like, it's really interesting. It's like same with Handmaid's Tale, where it's like, we can only envision one form of discrimination. Like, that's our futures. Like, can only like have that one form. Everything else is like, doesn't matter. You're like, that's not how it works. Like, it's never how it works.
No.
But like in all these like sci-fi allegories, like they're like, no, we have to focus on the one thing. Yeah, with Luther, it's like, yeah, why did they make the big labor robot black? That has some racial element to it. But because Cage isn't thinking about it, because why would he? Like, he has, he doesn't sound like the most like open-minded woke person in that like newspaper, one of the newspaper articles about his studio that he was like suing people over.
Yeah,
they mentioned like a case where like they were watching something on the some YouTube video that had like a, I think he was like an Arab man, and like he asked his like Tunisian coworkers, like, is that your cousin?
Oh,
it's like like basically grandpa racism. Like,
it's, yeah, just,
like, it's just like this guy is like the one person in charge of, you know, creating this game that was going to say something about race. Like, not at all. Like, they're just like, it's kind of like, yeah, using like 101 ideas that you learn in like grade school, and not like it, not advancing it beyond that. And then this, at the same time, like, yeah, making a lot of missteps that show how evident his own bias is, like with Luther. And then like, there's like the really, I saw it pop up a bunch of times on Twitter, like after, or in the past few weeks, like the scene where the nice guy, one of the resistance robots who's like the non-violent one, is like, we shouldn't do anything, we shouldn't do anything, like, who's like always kind of like not wanting to like engage, and he's black. And then like Minka Kelly's character is like super violent, like wants to kill everything, and then she's like, I think at some point she's like yelling at him, and she's like, you have to like better die than be a slave.
Yeah. Like, she said, if you don't, if you won't fight for your freedom, maybe you don't deserve it.
Yeah, which is, oof, like, come on. Like oh, the blindness in, like, writing that scene is so evident.
I had read before I played it about, you know, sort of the race element. So I was, like, I was specifically looking as I played the game, and I even found it strange that most of the people that you can choose to do some kind of violence to are black. Like, first of all, there's a lot of black characters in the game, which in a way is good, but also at the very beginning when you have Kara and Alice have just run away, the first thing I did was steal a black man's clothes. And then I went into the convenience store, and I had the option of holding up the black man that worked at the convenience store. And then, like, just even further through the game, like, you are attacking the, or you're infiltrating the media tower. Like, the guards there that you have a, you have an option to attack or not are black. When you have a option to shoot the cops, you're, like, pointing it at the black cop. And I was just like, I'm very uncomfortable right now. Can you please stop it?
Yeah. Like, all right, enough black people. Put some white people on.
Yeah. Yeah, like, there's lots of people that you end up fighting or killing even, but, like, most of them, sort of, they attack you first. Like, it's a, whereas I felt like when it was like, what do you want to do? Do you want to attack this person or not? It was, I don't know. I felt like it was usually black people in that situation, and it was just uncomfortable. I also find the rules of the world are strange. Like, maybe it was just a money thing, but like, why when I was playing Marcus is the paint shop attendant an android, but when I'm out in the city at midnight, why is it a human working at the convenience store? Like, I just felt like it wasn't clear what androids were made for.
Also, the, like, the market, like, for androids, you're like, how can everybody afford this? Like, these things seem like, like, this dad who like has zero money and is like living in a busted up house can afford to constantly break his android and replace her.
And replace her,
yeah. Yeah, get an $8,000 android. I think that's how much Kara was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also by drugs. Like, he has that, he has the red, whatever it is. I forget the name. Oh, red ice or something?
Red ice, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, it's like, yeah, they could have played with that. Like, had, like, people who couldn't afford androids, maybe they're more angry because, like, they're even more shut out from society.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Even, like, bad stories with that kind of incorporate that, like, you ever watch Surrogates? Like, Bruce Willis sci-fi movie where, like,
Sounds familiar.
Like, basically they live in, like, a VR world, and, like, they just, like, pilot android versions of them, of themselves, like, around the world, the real world. Yeah, and Surrogates, like, it comes to mind a lot, like, despite being, like, just an objectively bad movie. It has cool ideas about what how technology affects humans, particularly, because, like, people are just, like, never leaving their house. They're just, like, have VR goggles on. And then this one scene where, like, Bruce Willis has to walk down the street as a normal human, and, like, all the androids are, like, 8 feet tall. And they're just, like, walking really fast and, like, bumping him because they're just, like, super strong. So he kind of feels like it makes humanity look even more inadequate because, like, everyone's, like, doing that. But then there's, like, definitely, like, a wealth idea to it where, like, there's people who, like, are, like, shut out from society because they can't afford this. Literally, if you can't afford the VR apparatus to, like, pilot your robot version of yourself, then you can't exist in society. So, like, and that is reflective of, like, today when, like, you know, if you don't have a phone, how can you get a job? Like, you have to be always available to, like, check your email and stuff. So, like, none of that's there in Detroit. Like, the capitalism doesn't work. Like, there's no, like, reflection of, like, how markets work. Like, it's just, like, people get robots, and then they also don't like them. But if they want a robot, they could have one. And then they have a robot, and they also have a Roomba next to the robot.
That was actually my biggest laugh of the game. Like, when I turned on the Roomba, I died laughing.
Yeah. Because it just said, like, turn on vacuum cleaner. I was like, oh, she's going to just vacuum. But no, she just goes to turn on a Roomba.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I keep having this issue anytime Android stories come up. I even felt it went back when we did our Blade Runner episode. Mm-hmm. But I just am finding it less and less easy to believe how this goes down. Like, I feel like if you want androids to do labor, to make your life easier, to make things cheaper, don't make them pass the Turing test. Like, don't even give them faces, because people get attached to things with faces. Like, make them very clearly machines to do your work for you. I feel like it's just, you're just asking for it. Maybe it's the hubris thing, but, like, they shouldn't be mistaken for humans. Like, that shouldn't be a thing that happens if all you want them to do is labor.
Yeah.
So I also had a issue with how the sort of rules around androids were set up. The very beginning of the game, you're playing as Connor, and a deviant android has taken a little girl hostage, and you have to save her. And in my playthrough, Connor died. He got shot in the face.
Really?
And then yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, what now?
Yeah, he... No. Wait, he didn't get shot in the face. He sacrificed himself. He, like, ran at the other android, and they both went off the roof together.
Oh, wow.
But then
I think it happened to me, yeah.
Yeah, but then he just... Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I missed the gun. I didn't even know there was a gun the first time.
And then, you know, half an hour later, he comes back. So immediately, my idea of android death was that, like, the stakes are very low. Like, you just put their memory in a new android and, you know, go about your day. So I felt that sort of just, yeah, reduced the stakes of the story from the beginning and made me care a little less about the ultimate fates of the android and what was happening.
Hmm.
Yeah, totally. And they don't really... that could be a thing that's interesting, too, which, again, they just, like... It just comes up maybe twice. Because, like, at the end of the game, like, it is important that Connor can make multiple copies of himself or something. Because, like, you're like, oh, no, there's evil me. I became good. At least in my playthrough, I tried to become good. And then, like, you're like, no, they still own you. So that's kind of interesting, where your memories can be used against you.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, then for everybody else, it's like, it's really like a life or death thing. It's like, yeah. Every, like, especially with Kara, where he's like, the whole point of, like, her whole character is just like, don't let her die, because that'd be very upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she can actually, like, die,
yep.
I guess, compared to Connor. Whereas, like, Connor seems to get, like, multiple chances to come back, because I saw him die in two different ways, I think, in the Let's Play that I watched from Adam. And he came back. But then when Kara died in Adam's playthrough, that was it. She was dead. So.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't make sense because only one of her. It's like he has the whole like infrastructure of the corporation behind him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's like the brand new model or whatever, right? The fancy model.
Yeah.
You guys do his like evil playthrough, which is great because like I just watched a video of like if he succeeds in his bat being a bad guy, like. They're just like, great job, now you're getting replaced by, like, a new version.
Oh, really?
And he's, like, slightly taller.
No. Yeah.
And, like, has, like, cool shoes.
The playthrough that I watched has had him be, like, a full, like, totally wasn't android. Like, this is his purpose, like, blah, blah, blah. But then he lost the fight against Marcus. And then he was dead, I think. Oh, no. I can't remember if he comes back or not.
At the point, it's probably, like, too late.
It's like,
yeah,
the second fight on the boat, maybe. The fight on the boat, I think, is where he died, like, for actual real.
Yeah, it got to a point where you could choose whether you wanted to control Marcus or
That's
Connor.
Right.
And basically, the one that you would control was the one that lived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those parts are really funny because I remember like laughing a lot when like you're trying to argue with each other. It's like I'm the same person.
Yeah.
Like when the commands is like was it like persuade? It's like how can I persuade myself?
Yeah. So Kara's story can actually end almost immediately, like in her second chapter. I think, like, when the man is sort of trying to beat Alice, she can get killed right then, and that just ends her story. So that's just, like, a whole third of the game that doesn't appear, which makes me... So go ahead.
I saw this in the show notes, and I still don't believe you.
I mean... It's a weird thing because you have to, like, you have to fail a lot in order.
Deliberately? Because it's a quick time event, right?
Yeah, it's a quick time event. So you have to almost fail deliberately, which, like, sometimes, you know, you want to go for the bad ending. Like, I did it once in Heavy Rain, like, because I've played Heavy Rain a couple times. And the first time I got the good ending. And the second time I'm like, okay, I'm just going to be terrible and I'm going to get everyone killed. But that's also pretty uncomfortable, too, because with both Kara and with Madison in Heavy Rain, you just have to sit there and, like, watch them get beaten for minutes before it ends. And that's just like, ooh, this is gross, too. So, yeah, it's just, I don't know, I felt like the story, like, Kara's story was so unimportant to the overall plot that she could just die almost immediately and really not much would change.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, like, it's kind of like both, it's a shortcoming for sure of like interactive fiction where like there are branching stories. It also shows you like how like women are treated in those games, like as completely like just throwaway, or not throwaway, but like characters that are just like so... The way that it's viewed is so inhuman in many ways. Like, because for her, it's like her whole story is just like emotional manipulation. Like, because the whole idea is like the player is just like supposed to want to keep her alive. It's like that's awful. Most of the time when you're playing as her, it's very uncomfortable because you're especially like when you like go to that guy's house and like he like takes you to the basement and you're like, don't go to the basement. This stupid Quantic Dream and basements and women characters.
Yeah.
Just so unnecessary and, like, yeah, just so uncomfortable. Yeah, it's, like, different than, like, say, a horror movie where it's, like, this is, like, fun uncomfortable. It's just, like, no, this is just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, too, because Kara's, like,
oh my gosh, I was just going to say, like, becoming human goal is to, like, be a mom, which feels kind of, like, shitty compared to, like, Marcus's huge, like, freedom fighter
revolution
thing. Yeah, and Connor's like, whoa, maybe I'm actually a person kind of potential storyline. And it's just like, you can be a mom and take care of this kid. Yay.
This limit of my goals. I can't possibly helm a revolution and also raise a child. I mean,
right. God. It's just so, like, I don't know. We don't have to be a mom to, you know, find meaning in life when you're an android or a person.
You would think. What'd you think of, like, the her Alice being, like, an android? Oh. And then the game not telling you for, like, even despite, like, Kara supposedly...
She,
like,
sees it at the beginning.
She sees it, so she knows. But there's, like, ways that you can, like, incorrectly answer the questions where, it, like, the robots will be like, do you understand who she is? And she's like, what do you mean?
Interesting.
You can kind of have her, like, just be like, almost pretend like she didn't see that Alice was an android.
Huh. I, like, after thinking about it, like, at the time, I was like, oh, shit. She's, like... When Kara finds her in the Jericho place, like the second Alice, and she starts talking to her, and it's like, oh no, that's not her. I was kind of like, oh shit, like, whoa. But then after, I was like, why would this dude buy two androids and then just, like, I don't know.
Yeah, because, like, I guess his idea is, like, this, like, he's creating this family fantasy.
Yeah.
But then, like, his wife left him. But also, the guy's, like, mad rich. Garbage. What the hell?
Well, yeah. Pai is like, these two, he's got, like, tons of money to spend Roomba, on multiple androids.
Baby,
yeah.
Android. Roombas aren't cheap either.
His, like, huge, his big, like, flat screen TV, his drugs.
And he, like, just, like, dropped something about how he's, like, getting, like, workers' comp or something. I think all the mail is, like, how he's late. His bills are late. I guess his credit.
Credit card. Oh, debt. Yeah. They're, like, past due.
Yeah.
All of his weird bills. Also, like, how, if his bills and stuff are past due, how was Kara able to order a part for his washing machine?
The credit card companies of the future are very lax.
They're like, yo, yeah, sure, spend more money.
Yeah, no problem. You got it.
Add it onto your Android purchase.
I thought the Alice reveal was, like, I thought it was, first of all, it was telegraphed. Like, I did find a magazine that had a article about child androids for career-oriented people. And then, you know, there's so many times when, there's a few times when, like, Luther's like, Kara, I have to tell you something about Alice. And she's just like, oh no, not now. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, those are so weird.
So I thought, I don't know, I found the, I mean, just from a story structure point of view, I found Kara's and Alice's was the sort of worst. Like, it didn't make a whole lot of sense. They didn't have a whole lot of importance to the plot. I didn't understand why when they went out to Rose, like, they start in Detroit and then they go out and find themselves at Rose's place and Rose sends them right back to Detroit. And, like, why does she know about Marcus? And why does she know that Marcus can get passports? Like, he's, at that point, he had appeared on the television, but it didn't seem like they had connections with humans, like Jericho with other people. So I just felt their story was just all over the place, and it really centered on that mother-daughter relationship as opposed to making any sense from a narrative perspective. The one story that I liked the best was the Connor-Hank story. So Connor is the deviant hunter android, and Hank is, like, a grizzled, jaded policeman. And it's interesting how differently that story can go. So it sounds like, Yusuf, you and I played it pretty much the same way. But Adam's playthrough was a very different experience.
Yeah.
Like, I think I would have liked the game a lot better if it was just the Hank and Connor storyline, because I liked their sort of back and forth and their, like, odd couple relationship. When you're playing Connor as, like, not a total sort of android psycho, he's quite likable, like a puppy, so.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, he's very cute.
That's so funny. I didn't see, like, I watched Adam's playthrough, so I didn't see that side of him at all. Like, oh, Connor was, like, the Terminator. Oh, yeah. So he's, like, super scary to me. But I've seen so much fan art and stuff of Connor and, like, Hank. And I'm like, where does this relationship come from? Because I didn't see that at all. So I'm like, oh, my gosh. So I kind of want to play it, but, like, I don't want to play the other two stories.
Yeah, I wish that was an option. Because yeah. I do agree that it would, that in and of itself would be a solid game, because, like, he's good at, like, the police procedural elements. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, like, his one, like, David Cage is his one strength as a storyteller. And, mm-hmm. like, it works. Similar to Blade Runner, where it's, like, yeah, it's kind of mm-hmm. very similar setup, where, like, I want to do the right thing, but I'm also, like, yeah, kind of tied to this larger corporation. I have no autonomy. And then, like, the way, like, he's, like, cross-purposes with the other characters in the game. And I did also, the way I played it, yeah, like, when, it's just very heartwarming, like, especially the scene where he goes to, like, revive Hank, and, like, Hank is, like, passed out in his house. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's just a good, like, kind of odd couple-y sort of scene, where he has, like, pick out his ugly shirt.
Yeah.
We have three options, all ugly. And then, like, kind of, yeah, douse him, and, like, it's believably acted and, like, written mm-hmm. down. And that was, like, really compelling, like, a good piece of gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
There was, like, glimpses there of, like, what could have been, yeah, like, a better, like, a simple game that, sure, just as, like, apolitical, probably, but at least not offensively, so, you know.
Yeah. Did you find out sort of Hank's whole story?
Oh, yeah, his son died because the doctor was high on red ice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit.
And they had to have an android doctor work on it.
Yeah.
But he still died.
He still died, yeah. But you find out that basically Hank actually hates humans, not androids.
Oh, how the turntables.
Yeah. Yeah, because at the point where you're at his house, Riley, I guess you would have seen Adam picked up something. Like, he picked up the gun to look at that he was playing Russian roulette. But you can also pick up a picture of his son, and you find out that his son is dead. So that sort of leads to other conversations down the road. Because you, in your story is really depressing. The yes. Adam story was depressing. Like, was. Everyone died.
Yep.
Hank kills himself.
Yep.
Yeah. It's the one thing that I do find really impressive about the game is just the amount of branching stories.
Yes.
Like, when I played and then when I watched Adam play through, it was so completely different how things went. And especially around the end, like, there's just so many different scenes that you can see.
Mm-hmm.
With Marcus, there's, like, this whole, like, wartime scene, which I didn't see at all. So.
Oh, yeah, if you're aggressive, it kind of, like, turns to Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm actually glad I didn't have to play through that, because it looked really tedious.
It looked very tedious, because you're, like, doing the same move over and over again.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's, like, where they're, like, hiding behind the barricades, yeah. And then you have to, yeah. No, that part was not interesting, like, as a viewer even, so I don't know how mm-hmm. Adam kept playing through it. He was just like, this sucks, and he's, like, trying to figure out how to do it the right way.
Yeah, kind of, like, just, like, all the hints that the game gives you, like, I kind of wrote about that a bit, where it's just, like, it really clearly favors nonviolence, and, like,
yeah.
or especially with, like, Minka Kelly, like, it's weird that it made Minka Kelly, like, this character, like, this, like, kind of temptress character, where
mm-hmm. she's, yeah, like, she very much, yeah,
like, oh, do the violent thing, because it's easier, because you're mad, and, like, no, I won't. I am going to be nonviolent, because that is clearly morally superior, and then, like, you do that and everything goes great. So you're like, okay, I see how the game's going. Like, pretty much, like, everybody, all my characters survived except for Luther, which is so random.
Oh, no.
Like, he basically died in the boat. Because you take, like, with Kara, I made it to the checkpoint, but like then I didn't take the ticket from the other couple, so I didn't get in the bus. And then, but it doesn't matter because I think Rose is the black lady. She comes in and picks you up and takes you to like a bunch of boats. Kind of like it was very Handmaid's Tale. Remind me of that scene in the first episode or the first season. And like so, you get in boats and you kind of get across the river. But then like cops come and shoot up your boat, and like you can jump in the water, which I did. But then like Luther still gets shot, and it's very much like, it's okay. I knew what love is, finally.
Oh, Jesus. God.
I helped you get across.
See, I never made it to the checkpoint. I got caught in at the boat at Jericho.
That's where.
And so that's Adam's where the concentration camp comes in.
Yes. I saw that through my wife, was her playthrough, where it was really funny because she was like, oh, this part looks hard. Here, you play it. And then I was like, oh, sure, I got this. And I went to, like, sneak up on the guard and then, like, walking too fast. And just, like, they found me. Like, well, sorry.
No. Oh, no.
Time to go to concentration camp. Like, I totally failed.
So she, you can actually have her end up in one of the camps?
Oh, yeah.
Whoa. So at the boat, Adam's playthrough, she died there. Like, they were shooting at them and she actually ends up dying. So does Alice, so.
Jeez.
I didn't see that at all.
That's quite the ending.
Yeah. Adam was like, oh, shit. I guess that's over.
At the camp, you can do a few things there, too. You can choose to abandon Alice. You can just, like, escape by yourself if you want to. Or you can get... I did get out with Alice and Luther. So we just ended up hiding in a truck of like dead android bodies. So now we live in the dead android dumpster. I don't know what we're gonna do now, but the game's over.
Well, I guess depending on whether or not Marcus succeeded, then things will be better or worse.
That's true.
Because
you can still like end up in the dumpster if Marcus succeeded.
Yeah,
that's so weird.
Because they're totally separate stories, obviously. Like, it's like there is the interaction briefly, but for the most part it's like on its own track.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's its own game.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's so weird that her story can just be like, she's in Schrodinger's dumpster.
So, yeah, that's how that story went. What about, Marcus's story ended well. It was kind of gag-worthy. Like,
I heard he can sing at the end.
Does he what?
I didn't see any singing.
That's one of the options, is he can lift their voices in song.
They're all so terrible. Like, there's one where, like, you can, like, make out.
That's what I did.
The cops are like, well, all right.
Well, they love each other.
They want to do them. Time to kiss.
The morality choices are a real sort of hard failure in that your options are basically be completely pacifist, although things like knocking benches over are considered violent, which, not super violent, but the option is either be violent or let them shoot you enough that eventually the public feels bad and stops it. Like,
The same public that put you in the back of the bus and like doesn't give a shit about you, like okay.
Yeah.
And it'll decide as a monolith.
Mm-hmm.
It's very like, it's so simplistic, the way they set it up. It's like literally a meter that fills up. Which is just like very insulting, because it's like it's coming from such a place of like ignorance. Like, he's like never like probably participated in a real organized movement. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh yeah, you just do this, because MLK, everyone loved him the whole time. He never had any problems. He just had to be nonviolent, and then everything worked out. So yeah, it's that part's really dumb.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also very obvious what to do. Because I was like, at some point, I was hoping that he would die, like, because you're just standing from a bullet that's getting shot directly at you, and you're the front of the pack. Like, really, these cops hit everybody but you, or I guess a few times you get shot, but like you still survive pretty handily as Marcus and like all the titular characters.
Can you die as Marcus?
You could die if Connor kills you.
Oh yeah
Yeah, I actually thought that was kind of cool. In my game, Marcus, like, the revolution succeeded, and Connor was there, and he had become a deviant too, and he decided to help them. And then you're sort of standing behind Marcus while he's giving this speech, and then you, like, get re... I don't know what it's called. Like, you get, like, undeviated.
You get patched.
Like, you get patched, yeah. And then you have to figure out, like, a way out of it. Otherwise, you just shoot Marcus.
Oh, shit. That's so cool. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Like, that was a part that I thought was kind of cool. Like, I really wish they had gone more into the cyber life stuff. Like, there's little, like, pieces here and there. Like, you see that... Kamsky, who created Cyberlife, Marcus was a gift from Kamsky to Carl. So it's like, is there something different about Marcus? Like,
that's a Westworld plotline.
Yeah.
Was this what was meant to happen? Like, there's just so many questions that, like, I really hoped would be answered by the end. Like, why is Marcus the android messiah? Like, why can he make other androids free? Although... they also don't do a very good job with this because he makes them free, but then they never show any kind of emotion or thought of their own. It's just like, stop listening to the humans and you listen to me now is basically how it went.
I know. It's like delivered so straight ahead where it's like, oh, that's good. It's like, no, that's not good. What are you talking about? Like, how's that better? But no, it's fine because they're just like your little robot buddies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like it's not believable that every single one of them would be like, yeah, I'm gonna stand behind you and get shot at. This is cool.
Yeah, like, that seems terrible.
Wish they sort of just gave more answers. It kind of feels like they're leaving stuff for DLC possibly, but I really wish I got more from Cyberlife and how this happened. Like, was Alice a deviant this whole time? I don't know. Like, the idea of a child android doesn't make a lot of sense to me because these androids are supposed to be very obedient, but, like, children, that's not what children are, so I don't know.
Alice, like, sort of seems like a deviant when you think about it because, like, from the beginning, like, she's not... I mean, there's a question of a deviant versus, like, she's just so abused that she can't really perform her functions anymore.
Maybe.
Because she's just trying to survive. So yeah, but they don't really like set that up. It's like you don't even like the game doesn't ask you whether or not she's a deviant, right? Like she's just like the target for Kara to like focus on and like protect. But like it's never like she's not breaking her programming. Like she doesn't seem like she has any programming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was very difficult to get attached to Alice. I found.
It wasn't her strange dead eyes and 3D teeth. Did you get attached to the menu robot? The menu android that walks away at the end if you let her go?
I didn't. At one point, she was like, I have a question for you. Are we friends? I was like, no, we're not friends. And then she was so sad. She was just like... He was just pouting every time I saw her after that.
Oh, man. That's cold.
I'm
trying to be honest.
What about you? Did you get attached?
Not at all, because I played it in, like, two sittings, because I had to review it. So, like, I didn't get that much menu action. So, like, I pretty much, like, started at the beginning where she's like, this isn't a game. It's real. I was like, okay, buddy. And then the end is like where she's like, I have an epiphany. Like, I want to go. And you're like, okay. So that's like the entirety of like my experience with her. But I thought it was so funny that like you don't get any story DLC so far, but you do get a patch where they can bring her back. Bring a new version of her back for players who miss her so much, despite the whole point of the end of the game being that she's a real person and shouldn't be your slave.
Yeah.
Well, they're like completely ignoring all the lessons that they established. The few lessons that they actually put any weight behind, they completely like kind of undercut it by like allowing you to just bring her back because you want to, because you gamers rule.
I found it, I wasn't attached. I saw her maybe 3 or 4 times. Like at one point, she gave me a survey about androids.
Really?
Yeah. And. it just, like, I don't know, like, I definitely separated the menu of the game from the actual game. So any sort of attachment to androids I felt was didn't transfer out to that. Like, when she asked to be free, I was like, okay, whatever, be free. But it wasn't, I don't know, I found that wasn't effective at all.
It's so transparent what it's trying to do that you're like, come on. Like,
yeah,
it's just super, like, facile. Like, it's just, it was like a weird, I mean, it's not surprising, like, that he would put it there. But it's probably the most, like, evident case of, like, his inability to, like, make a compelling, dramatic, like, you know, argument or allegorical argument. Like, mm-hmm. it's just this character is like, this is the argument. This is the point. Get the point. Follow the point. Okay, good.
All right. Did anyone have anything we haven't talked about yet?
Oh, I do like all of Connor. Like, I just want to reiterate how great Connor is. The scenes are fun. The scenes are so good. Like, the detective stuff is, like, better than, whatchamacallit, L.A. Noir. Like, it's, like, good detective stuff that, I mean, it's just following basic directions, but it's still fun. Especially, like, the first few missions. Like, that poor android, you're like, oh, this is so sad. And then you can't control, like, what like, there's a certain limitation to, like, the options you can make Connor do. So, like, he's still a cop. So he still has to bring him in. But, like, you're just like, this sucks. So it's kind of, it's, like, really effective of what it's trying to do. And all the, like, the chasing and stuff.
I agree. That was, it had the sort of most interesting, least problematic story of them. And was also the most fun to play. I feel just like David Cage needs an editor, both in terms of story and in terms of gameplay. I mean, we already talked about all the ways the story is a problem, but, like, there's, I find, like, the quick time event action scenes are actually really fun. Like, I enjoy that kind of gameplay, but there's just some scenes that just drag. Like, when you're trying to get to Jericho and you have to scan, like, 7 different pieces of graffiti. Or when you're in the sort of Eden Club and you have to go look at, I don't know. I kept doing it wrong. So I had to do like 12 different androids to track that one through the club. And then just like the chores at the beginning of the game with Marcus and Kara. It's like, okay, I get it. They do chores. They're androids that do chores for people. Like, so
did
I
you play
like
the piano?
Yeah.
The piano?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Marcus can play the piano.
In
the very beginning, and it's just like tippy tapping on the.
Wait, really? You didn't train you how to play the piano?
Yeah,
that's so funny.
They should have like a scene where he's like downloading piano playable.
How to play piano
software? It's weird how they made, like also how they remove any nuances like with humanity because they make all the humans so evil, or so many of them. Besides like Hank. Like the like I was thinking about like Lance Henriksen's son and like the Marcus's section where he's just like, hey dad, you love him better than me. Like he just comes straight at it like 100 like miles an hour like into the scene. You're like, what?
Yeah, just like kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'm so angsty and I hate you, dad.
You love and your then, perfect like, android.
Yeah, and like every human is like, especially when Kara's story is trying to like murder her.
Yeah,
like, okay. Mm-hmm. But it's just like so hacky.
Yeah, and every story of androids becoming deviants, it's like almost the same one. It's like android is being abused, android kills owner. Like that's the only.
And the cops can never figure it out. They're like, why are they doing it?
Yeah,
I just what can't is put it together.
So we have one question from Steven Wilds, and it's how does Detroit compare to Heavy Rain specifically?
I think it's definitely like much more refined. Like I found all the motion stuff like makes a lot more sense, or at least most of it makes like much more sense than Heavy Rain in terms of like, I feel like there are a lot more points of frustration playing Heavy Rain. Where I was like, oh, I wanted to do this, but the character did not do that at all. So like, I had a lot easier time controlling the characters, and like I felt like there was more stealth in this game, or am I just misremembering Heavy Rain? It's been a long time.
No, I think there's more stealth and sort of more options in how to attack situations. But I found that Heavy Rain had some points where it used the controls in a really interesting way. Like, I like the quick time events for action. I don't particularly like the ones where it's like, hold R1, now hold L1, now tap this button, when it's something like small, like it's like to open a door or to pick up a person or something like that. Mm-hmm. And same with, I really don't like when I'm forced to like flick my controller or turn my controller in order to do things. I'm like, let's get rid of that right now.
Yeah.
Whereas I found in Heavy Rain, there was a couple of places where that really worked for me. There was one scene where you're sort of like driving down the highway in the wrong direction. And I found like it made sense to do it that way. And then there's another one in Heavy Rain where you're going through this like electric grid thing and trying to not get hurt. And so it kind of made sense to do the like finger twister in order to push like 7 buttons at once. I think like this game is a lot prettier. I find like the narrative branches a lot more, but Heavy Rain still was definitely sort of clunky in places in terms of story, but it was also like a much more straightforward narrative, like a little less ambitious, maybe, and a little less room for screwing up.
Except for the ridiculous twist. I mean, he definitely doesn't try and make his worlds make any sense. In retrospect, they don't survive like conversation afterwards. Like, how's the detective, who is out of shape for one thing, managed to like get to all these scenes ahead of time and like plant all his evidence and then run away and come back and then pretend to be a detective? But yeah, no, it's also like Heavy Rain was like a lot more pulpy cop narrative, which is again like really the only place only thing he knows how to write. So like it worked on that level. Yeah, like Detroit, the parts with Marcus are just like unbearable. So.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, like, a large chunk of the game, unfortunately.
All right. So I guess that wraps up our discussion on Detroit. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem. It was really fun.
Do you want to let people know where they can find you and your work online?
Sure. I am on Twitter as YumiYu, YOUMEYOU. And that's, yeah, all my stuff is up there. So you could look to that for my writing, and I guess you'll include Waypoint article in the show notes. Yeah. But yeah, that's where you can find that particular piece of writing.
All right. And Riley, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Kaleri with an underscore. It's K-A-L-E-R-I with an underscore.
And you can find me at Josyla underscore or on YouTube at Cannot Be Tamed. And if you have any feedback or questions for us, you can reach out at MediaMavensCast@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter at _MediaMavens. There is also a forum for discussion of any of our episodes at CartridgeClub.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.